This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Oh, we're pretty stacked. What's happening? Tinky and Tierney coming in from our Rocket Mortgage studio. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Hope all is well. What's good? Tinky and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. And third hour back on the tube. We'll get back on the simulcast, so CBS Sports Network will join us a little later. But right now, just our great affiliates, radio.com, the way to follow the show. Twitter, of course, at Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney. Clayton Kershaw slaying some demons and slaying them in a big way. We'll get to that. We've got a new head coach in the NBA, and we've got a lot of drama in Dallas. They always say, Tig, it's bigger in Dallas, including controversies.
Yeah, no, this isn't a good one either, because we're only six games in, and they're leading the division, mind you, so they're playing horrible, but they're leading the division right now. Their defense is Swiss cheese, and offensively, they just lost Dak Prescott. They lost embarrassingly on the primetime stage on Monday night to the Arizona Cardinals, and guys are already saying, we hate this coach. We don't like him. We don't want to be here. He can't coach. His staff can't coach. They're lazy, etc. It's a bad look for the Dallas Cowboys right now. And the only way it's going to get better is if they start winning. And I don't see that happening easily.
Curious what America thinks about this. Want to drop the poll on you fast. We'll play McCarthy sound. We'll play Jerry Jones sound. I want to throw something in there as well. But here's the tweet. Go give it a vote, at Tiki and Tierney. So following scathing off-the-record comments directed at the coaching staff, do you believe Mike McCarthy will be one and done in Big D? Yes, time's ticking. No, he will stabilize. Not yet sure. Still evaluating. Listen, as much as I talk about point spreads, I am not a guy who wastes a penny at the track. I know nothing about horses. I love the beauty of horses. I've competed in a charity horse race event, which I somehow won and made some loot for the great charity for the Children's Hospital. But what I don't understand is, right, how this early, Teak, into somebody's tenure here, you can literally have the trifecta. You can walk in there. You can have that's where the horse racing analogy was going. You can have injuries. Okay, a lot of teams have to deal with injuries.
It happens. Especially this year, because the offseason was so jacked up.
Yep. Well, just look what we mentioned yesterday. Devin Bush, Steelers out. Taylor Lewan out for the Tennessee Titans. They're playing each other this week. Both teams 5-0. So every team's got to navigate injuries. It's the atrocious nature of the sport, particularly in a pandemic year. Okay. Most teams have to deal with and scheme around deficiencies in certain areas. Now, sometimes you're just deficient because you don't have good players. Sometimes the injuries lead to those deficiencies. But the first leg of the trifecta, they've got injuries. The second leg of the trifecta, they've got deficiencies on defense, gaping holes, right? The third leg of the trifecta is one that you usually don't come back from, and that's a lack of trust and or respect. And Mike McCarthy spoke about this, and here's what he wants to see happen.
I've always stated this to every team that I've coached. I think it's important to handle things as men. I mean, if you do have something to say publicly that is of most importance, I think it's important to say it to the individual, particularly in a group dynamic setting.
Listen, Tig, I know that we have our methods and we have our ways of falling into traps and overreacting, but I do need to point this out, and I don't know if I said it off the air or on the air. I think I said it on the air, but I'll repeat it real fast. So Adam Gase's team right now is strongly threatening. Matter of fact, if you actually play it forward, they're leading, and leading, by leading, I mean losing. They will shatter the all-time worst point differential mark set by the absolutely inept 1976 Tampa Bay Bucks, right? The only thing that's good about that team right now is that the players are sticking together. You have the worst team, quite conceivably the worst team of all time, and there's not infighting. And you've got Dallas?
Yeah.
And they're saying this about the coaching staff? Listen, I never thought Mike McCarthy was a great coach. I thought he was always good and always competent and certainly more of an asset than a detriment to any franchise. Certainly with Green Bay. I thought it was time for him to go at the end, but I also thought as we kind of surveyed the land, you know, whoa, who's going to hire him? We both viewed him as a guy that would make a franchise better. But how does it go this awry for a good football man 6 weeks into the season? How?
I think there is a couple of things here. One, I'm going to defend Mike McCarthy.
Okay.
And the other one, I can't defend Mike McCarthy. So we know how this offseason went. Well, Mike McCarthy gets hired as the head coach after Jason Garrett and Dallas Cowboys decide not to renew his contract. He wasn't technically fired, but whatever. We'll call it. He gets fired, Jason Garrett. Mike McCarthy seems like a very good replacement because he's going to bring some discipline. He's going to bring, you know, some offensive acumen, different, you know, schemes that he likely used with Aaron Rodgers when he was in Green Bay. But because of the pandemic, these guys were never around a brand new coaching staff, save for Kellen Moore and maybe a couple other assistants there. And so it feels like, man, I don't even know this guy yet. I meet him in August when training camp starts. I don't know what he's all about. I don't know what the philosophy is. I don't know what our culture is going to be, et cetera, et cetera. So you get to the start of the regular season and you just suck. And by the way, Mike Nolan is a part of this conversation as well. He's an extension of the head coach because he's his DC. So they get to camp and they install this new defense. Come to these games, they're preaching it, that they most of it's socially distanced learning, and you start playing horribly. And they don't know what they're doing. They look confused. They get beat. They're one of the worst defenses, not the worst. They're one of the worst defenses in football. And like, what's the excuse? Because every player wants to come into every season and have a coach help him get better. You know what I mean? And part of the problem with trying to get better this offseason is that you just weren't actually around your coaches, right? You didn't get to know them. They didn't get to know you. And as a result, they don't know what motivates you. They don't know how you learn best. Some guys learn best by doing it. Some other guys learn best by, you know, immersing themselves in playbooks. They have no clue because the staff is all new. And so that's how I'm going to I defend Mike McCarthy, because that is a mitigating circumstance, or it's an existing circumstance that can't be mitigated, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other side, I can't defend Mike McCarthy on, and that is, one, having a pulse on the stars, the veterans, the guys on this squad who should be telling him this anyways. Right. I mean, I remember, you know, Coach Fossil did this, even Coach Coughlin to an extent. He certainly did it after I left. He'd have guys come in and be like, all right, how's everybody feeling? You know, what issue do I need to address? And he would get the idea of where people were disgruntled. Mike McCarthy seemingly, and this came out of left field to Mike McCarthy. He had no idea, but clearly it had been going on for a long time, to the point that they're talking to Jane Slater a month and a half into the season and telling them, our coaches can't coach. We don't have any idea. They don't know what they're doing. That's what you hear. And we said this yesterday. That's what you hear when a coach is leaving. Like, you know, he's maybe there a year too long, or this season is it. He's getting canned. You don't hear that 6 weeks in to a guy's new tenure at a new organization.
What I think is even more alarming, Tegan, and you referenced the tweet there by Jane Slater, it's apparently they were sitting on this for a while. So,
yes,
you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, well, okay, we were pretty good for a while, and then, you know, something changed and tilted the needle in a direction that might no longer be palatable here for everybody. But that's not the case. As I read the tweet, I have it in front of me from Jane Slater. She put this out yesterday, and I know we read it yesterday, but for those who may have missed the words, Cowboys players initially bought into keeping things internal, which means there were some festering issues for a while.
Yeah.
Now, as they sit 2-4, the discontent's leaking out on the coaching staff, quote, totally unprepared, quote continues.
Yeah.
They don't teach. They have no sense of adjustments on the fly. Somebody else said they just aren't good at their jobs.
Yeah. So here's the other thing.
You can't have a more scathing indictment than that.
Here's the
unless you said the guy's not showing up on time.
True.
He doesn't care. Minimums.
Yeah. The only thing you can say. Yeah. Exactly. He doesn't care. He's not even there.
He doesn't know how to run a Zoom meeting. Like that. There's certain things you're expected to do. You know, even Adam Gase shows up. You know what I'm saying? Like it's amazing.
Yeah. Now here's the. It's not the other side of the coin. It's the other side of the coin. Like the, you know, think of a nickel. And on the right side, there's one thing. On the left side, there's another thing.
I think every coin's a little different like
true.
That.
True. But here's the thing. But you know what I mean. Like if I say the other side of the coin, it's like I'm flipping the conversation. I'm not flipping the conversation. I'm staying on this side. Okay. But the question, the question that comes next is, all right, yes, it's only 6 weeks, but are they giving them a chance? Are these players giving these coaches even a chance? Or is it just the only reason that I hear what you're saying and the fact that they've been sitting on this for a while, right? What does that mean? 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is. It's only 6 weeks in the season. This must have happened immediately once the season started. So are they actually giving the coaches a chance? And so the answer to that question is probably no, because it's so bad. It's so egregiously bad that they feel like there's no remedy to it.
Is it that bad?
It has to be. I mean, look at their defense, BT. Look at how horrible they play. You know, the fact that even their good players, Dak Prescott, had 7 turnovers. He played 4-5 games, right? He had 7 turnovers. No, 4.5 games.
4.5 games.
4.5 games. He had 7 turnovers, 3 lost fumbles, and 4 interceptions. Mm-hmm. Zeke Elliott, who hasn't lost 5 fumbles in his entire career to this date, has 3 fumbles and 3 lost ones on the season.
How's that McCarthy's fault?
It's not McCarthy's fault, but there's an accountability that's not being, I don't know, it's not being trumpeted enough. And maybe that's because of the pandemic. Everybody's separate. They're not on the field as much as they used to be. They're not interacting and banging each other as much as they used to be. So it's just a physical thing. But guys feel like they're not being coached. And the reason this feels so bad is the expectation was high, right, for the Dallas Cowboys. It was really high. Especially given that everybody knew that the Eagles were somewhat compromised. The Washington football team and the New York Giants were going to be, you know, battling for the cellar dweller position as they try to figure out, you know, themselves with their new coaching staffs. So it was really, you got to be better than the Philadelphia Eagles. And the Eagles are old and, you know, hurt. And we've seen that. They got young players all over the place. You just got to be better than those guys. And in the fact, on paper, we're so much better than those guys, we should run away with this division. In actuality, they're not. They're playing way down to expectations, and that's frustrating, I'm sure, for fan bases and us as media, but certainly it is for this team who thought they were going to be good. And in the absence of having an excuse, you know, not pointing the finger at themselves, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have to point it somewhere else, and it must be the coaching.
Well, when that happens, there's one guy. There's only one guy who matters in that franchise, and of course, Jerry Jones. Come on now, so I get a little too cantankerous right here now. Jerry had a way in. Let's see what he had to say about the wonderful performance the other day. Here's Jerry Jones.
We're dealing with how Dak. You can talk about the Zeke fumble. You can talk about all those things, but the real world is that there are numbers of things out there that we can address. And when you play football games and you play above the way we played last night, you'll have a chance to win the football game. So we just were simply outplayed.
All right. So, I mean,
what did that – what? Huh?
Was there
any point to that?
No, there's a microphone. He's rambling. He's being Jerry. And he's also probably without anything really salient to say at this point. I mean, I don't know – What can you say?
Yeah.
I would love to know within the context of the interview, was it directly broached? Hey, you know, Jerry, what do you say about this lack of trust here, this lack of respect that is so obvious? Like, you didn't get that with Jason Garrett. You got, you know, a lot of fans saying, well, all right, he's the clapper. Well, he's not going to elevate.
Well, McCarthy's doing the same thing.
No, I know. But at least during the Garrett era, it was for the most part void of controversy. I mean, here you are a month and a half into McCarthy's tenure, and you've got the worst thing that's blossoming under Mike McCarthy's nose, and that is a direct, compromise or challenge, however you want to frame it, of his leadership and his ability to, you know, propel this team where everybody wants him to go. I mean, this is really ugly.
Yeah, you don't know what you got till it's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what you got. You got to appreciate Jason Garrett, who won a Coach of the Year award. But, and you know, how do they solve this? It's going to take Mike McCarthy maybe one of his greatest efforts, because he has never been I don't know, like really forthcoming. And remember when he was in Green Bay, the disconnect that happened with him and Aaron Rodgers, mm-hmm. and whether or not he was going to call plays, and you know, maybe, you know, he's putting too much faith in a young Kellen Moore whose play calling is so erratic and random. And it's kind of what Mike McCarthy does best, is call plays. There might be some changes here. I wouldn't be surprised, and we said this yesterday, and I'll say it again, if Mike Nolan gets fired in a couple of weeks and Kellen Moore gets the play calling taken away from him. Because at some point, Mike McCarthy's got to salvage his reputation with his team that he's just starting with. And that's a hard thing to say when you're 6 weeks into a regular season.
I'll leave you with this. Keep in mind, Dallas has two wins and Philly has the one. They've got the tie as well, but Dallas does have that second win. And in terms of the postseason projection per sports line, right now, Dallas, despite having one more win, is a 31.3 percent, you know, that's how they handicap their chances to make the playoffs here. Philly, with one less win, is at 48.3. So basically 17 percentage points ahead of Dallas, despite having a lower winning percentage. Chew on that. They're telling you a lot of things there. Part of it is obviously the implementation of the schedule and what they project moving forward, but also what you can't necessarily quantify in terms of stats, but this stench that is very quickly enter the Dallas organization. Now, nobody saw this coming. Nobody saw this. And now the onus is on them, McCarthy, to defumigate fast, move on, or that's it. He's done. All right, T, coming up. So, Kershaw, I told you I liked the matchup. He slayed a demon, and a big one, but has he officially silenced all of his detractors? The World Series was pretty hot last night. Kershaw was historically great. I'm going to drop a stat on you that I guarantee you don't know, that I guarantee will blow your mind. Baseball next, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227 here on Tiki and Tierney. Brought to you by Geico, 855-212-4CBS. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. All right, here's our poll question as we're going to get into the baseball here. World Series Kershaw was phenomenal. I don't know if you know how phenomenal he was, but we'll get into that. But here's the poll question. So following some scathing off-the-record comments directed at the coaching staff, do you believe Mike McCarthy will be one and done with Dallas? And right now, 49.6% of you say yep, time's ticking. 32.5% say nope, he'll eventually stabilize this. And a little more than 17% say not sure, still keeping an eye on this. Go give it a vote at Tiki and Tierney. All right, so Clayton Kershaw. Here's what you need to know about Kershaw before we get into last night. Clayton Kershaw now has 12 postseason wins going into last night. And I said this on the air yesterday, Tiki. Going into last night, in the 25 years encompassing the wild card era since the birth of the wild card, only Justin Verlander, Hall of Famer,
mm-hmm.
Andy Pettit, not a Hall of Famer, but an all-time
yep.
Yankee,
yep.
have more postseason wins. All right, so right away, so I'm not saying the narrative is completely skewed because the ERA is what it is and what it's been over the years, but
yep, 4.31.
Yep, but right away, that was before last night, 11, now 12 postseason wins. So, I mean, that's basically 3 decades worth of baseball. He's been doing some good stuff. Clayton Kershaw last night, I told you, I said, I love the matchup, and I really said that I picked the Dodgers to win rather easily the series. I'm certainly going to stick by that. I did not like what I thought the Rays would trot out there last night, and they had to get rid of some of their lefties. Like Choi didn't start; instead, they put Diaz in there, and he's batting first. He's not a leadoff guy. Hunter Renfroe played right field; he's batting fourth. I just didn't like what Clayton Kershaw would force Kevin Cash to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, the first inning, that slider was off, and it was off in a big way. What were you thinking? Before I get into the historical element here, what were you thinking watching Kershaw, you know, rip off those 58-foot sliders in the dirt?
Yeah, it was a little bit troubling because they detailed this later on in the broadcast, and It makes sense why he's been so good, because his fastball, his changeup, his slider, they all look exactly the same coming out of it, you know, from behind, because he throws so oddly with his arm coming from behind his body and his glove is leading. You can't pick it up until it's literally about to leave his hand. And so when you see him struggling with his variable pitches, I said, man, this is going to be a long day for Clayton Kershaw. And this narrative that is unfair to him, because he has done some really good things in the postseason. So it's unfair to him, this narrative. I said, here we go. It's going the wrong way. But then, not dissimilar to Dustin May, who in Game 7 of the NLCS had some control issues, couldn't find the strike zone, he worked his way out of it. But unlike Dustin May, he didn't give up a run. And so once he snapped back in the second inning, it was like, all right, you guys are in trouble, Rays. Tampa Rays, you guys aren't getting hits today.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear from Kershaw. Here's what he thought of his start.
You know, I was fortunate to make it through that first. You know, I was bouncing my slider like 48 feet and didn't quite make the adjustment until the second inning. So fortunate to make it through that. But, you know, really after the first, you know, felt pretty good with everything. And just a great game all the way around for us.
Okay, now
here's a stat, BT.
Yes, Deke.
That was his tenth career postseason start, allowing one run or fewer. Obviously, gave up a home run. One run or fewer, which is eighth most all time. It's now he's tied for seventh most all time.
Mm-hmm. But Justin, there's also the wild card round, so he's pitching more.
True. Yep, exactly. So he's tied with Justin Verlander, Roger Clemens, and John Smoltz for most postseason games with only giving up one run, which is pretty amazing.
That's pretty fantastic. Now, listen, that's not to say, whether it's, I don't know, Game 6 back in 2013 against the Cards, he gave up 10 hits and a bunch of runs in four frames, or the next year against the Cards as well, the Game 1 NLDS, eight runs, eight hits. I mean, these things obviously happen.
Yeah, you can't erase the negative.
No, I mean, even in the World Series a couple of years ago against the Red Sox, five runs, seven hits, four innings. You know, a couple of years before that, the 2017 World Series, six runs, four and two-thirds against the Astros. These are things that are on his ledger, but now this is also on his ledger. First of all, this entire postseason, he's been phenomenal. He's been phenomenal, right?
Yep.
And it's ironic because you talk about Kiermaier. Kiermaier's the one guy, number one lefty-lefty, but Kiermaier has not hit well since he hurt his hand. If there was one guy that I would say would not get a hit, let alone a home run, it would be Kevin Kiermaier, who's, you know, an elite outfielder, but he's really been scuffling with the bat, and he tagged him pretty good. But once he got past the first inning, all right, the first 20 pitches that he threw, there was one swing and miss. There was no deception. Guys weren't reacting. Like, it was just basic, benign stuff. Whatever he did, the next generation of swing and misses, 38 swings, 19 misses, okay? Which is basically a 50% whiff rate. And you always hear the expression, especially in October, man, I need a guy with make you miss stuff. I need a guy who's going to miss barrels and just, you know, make you miss. And, you know, I didn't even know this. The whiff rate's been around since 1988. I honestly did not know that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's not a stat most people pay attention to.
No, I've checked it. I don't even really reference it on the show. You know, but it's been in the baseball lexicon, if you will, I'd say, you know, strongly for a decade. But I didn't even know that it was born in 1988. But what did Kershaw do last night? Last night, Clayton Kershaw's 50% whiff rate was the highest of his career. And think about how great the career's been. And the highest since it was born in 1988. Nobody has had a higher whiff rate.
Wow.
Can we kind of let him off the hook now?
Yeah, I agree. And again, look, it's one game down. You got to win four. It's one game down for the Los Angeles Dodgers, who feel, according to Dave Roberts, that this is their year. And when you look at their lineup and how they've been mashing, and by the way, you got Mookie Betts now, who is amazing.
Oh, he was great.
It's amazing. Two stolen bases in the same inning, the double steal. It was like, dude, right? The Dodgers are playing Little League Baseball out here. But, you know, they should be the team that gets to the World Series. The only thing that will derail them is if their pitching goes awry. And Clayton Kershaw took care of business in his first outing. They have a one-zip lead now on the Rays. And he may come back up again and may get another chance to just solidify, fully exonerate that, you know, exercise that demon that everybody's talking about in that narrative. But to start it, he did it right.
You know, in a lot of ways here, T, we were deprived because the Dodgers were too good last night. Once they hung that four spot in the fifth inning, I'm like, ah, oh, then you tack on to, I'm like, this, he's not going to get a chance, even though he's south of 80 pitches, you know, with that stuff. And it was just so apparent. Even the fastballs were like on the black at the knee. I mean, everything was perfect once he got out of the first inning. And I really wanted to see him have a chance to dance for nine. But once they put up that number, why risk it? You know, you put him out there, you know, a bloop and a blast. Well, you know, he was good, but he wasn't great. You got to deal with that nonsense again. Yep. So I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun. You mentioned Mookie Betts, and you know, as much the double steals, that's great. That's an element that you can't, not many teams can replicate.
No.
But I thought even scoring from third on that read.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a bullet to first base.
That's right. But he was gone.
That was a bullet.
He was gone as soon as the ball was hit.
Yeah. And they showed the advanced number. I think it was 3.26. Now, he had a great lead. He had a great secondary lead. His instincts were flawless. They talked about this. There was no wasted energy. I've got my lead. Pitcher goes home. I've got my secondary lead. Contact. Boom. I'm home.
Yep.
And he was, he's
great. Yeah, it's an intangible that you can't measure. You know what I mean? That instinct, that type of instinct you can't measure.
No, and he's instinct is different than just, and you know this, pure speed. He's got both. And the other thing, and I'll leave you with this, and I tweeted this last night. I'd love to get some tweets from some great baseball fans that maybe even go back before I do in terms of what I've watched, you know, really starting to watch baseball in the early 80s. Watching Bellinger, I have not seen anybody, I really mean this, this is not being, you know, living in the moment here. Mm-hmm. I have not seen anybody combine sheer violence with impeccable artistry on a home run swing.
Yeah.
The guy that comes to mind in terms of the violence was Canseco.
Mm-hmm.
But he had like a truck driver swing, for lack of a better.
Yeah.
He had a blue collar, let it rip. This refined.
Yeah, it's like Ken Griffey. It's like Ken Griffey matched with Mark McGwire type of swing.
Yeah, and I thought of Griffey too, but even like the violence.
Yeah, but I mean the structure of his swing.
The loop.
It's so Griffey, and he can get down and reach those low pitches. And when he connects, you know, man, it's over.
Man, that was a beautiful swing. Big win. Dodgers jump on him early, as I surmised they would. And we'll see if the Rays punch back, which they usually do. But series far from over. But the Dodgers, you know, three wins away from doing something they haven't done since 88. And really getting prepared to hopefully back up the pretty bold proclamation from their skipper, not once but twice, that they're going to win. All right, Teak, let's get the update from Bob Huesler coming up. We'll get to Inbounds, Out of Bounds right after that, and we'll get it after Bob, and Bob's update is right now. Here he is. All right, getting ready to tee up a little Inbounds, Out of Bounds. Trevor Lawrence is on the menu. That's one of the things we'll debate. Mike Vrabel's made his way in there as well, but first time to ask the pros, give you a chance to ask us anything you want, brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. So here's how you do it. Pretty easy. Just drop us a tweet at CBS Sports Radio and use the hashtag Ask the Pros at CBS Sports Radio, hashtag Ask the Pros. Make sure you stick around and listen later on. Teak and I, right at the end of the show, we'll go through the best and we'll take something that inspires us and we'll answer it. And we'll give you some props on the air as well. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. All your car care needs, guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. Here's a question. I don't think we would really give this much weight during the summer. Is the AFC better than the NFC? Meaning, are there more truly viable Super Bowl contenders in that conference than in the one that on paper was thought to be much better, at least coming into the season? That's a good debate. Teak and I will get to that coming up in about 30 minutes. But right now it's time for a little Inbounds, Out of Bounds. Ready, Teak?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right, what's wrong, and who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and Out of Bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki. So in Sunday's improbable comeback win over the Texans, Titans head coach Mike Vrabel made an incredibly risky but seemingly brilliant decision. So the Titans were down 30-29, 3 minutes to go. Vrabel appeared to intentionally send a 12th defender onto the field for a key second and one play. Now, as you would imagine, the move led to a penalty, which gave Houston a first down, but it stopped the clock in the process. And yesterday, Vrabel dodged questions about the move.
On that late 12 men on the field penalty against you guys, I guess, was that, you know, intentionally done to stop the clock?
You know, we have to do a better job with penalties. Communicating, trying to give ourselves the best chance to win a football game.
Right, but the 12 men on the field, one in particular, were you trying to save some clock time by getting that call?
The second and one, you know, just trying to make a stop there and substitute it in, you know, an extra DB. But we ultimately got to do a better job on first down in four-minute defense and not give up 9 yards.
And by the way, good follow-up on the reporter. He's obviously listening rather than just nodding his head and pretending he's listening. He didn't get the answer. He followed up. Good job. So inbounds, out of bounds here, T. While Vrabel's move worked this time around, it was too risky and not smart to do moving forward.
No, of course not. By any means necessary. Is it cheating? Maybe. But if you're not cheating, you're not trying. I love how the reporter's like cracking up, trying not to laugh as Vrabel is dodging the hell out of that question. But we know that Mike Vrabel, a disciple, not necessarily under him as a coach, but as an appreciator of the Bill Belichick school of coaching, knows that there are ways to manipulate time. And in the NFL, if you get a penalty, the clock stays stopped. They might need to adjust that rule based on who the penalty is on. But that might be opening a Pandora's box. But it saved them 40 seconds, and they scored with 2 seconds left on the clock. So to tie the game and ultimately get in overtime, which Derrick Henry almost single-handedly won. So, I mean, I credit him a lot. I'm going to say, I forget what the question was, but...
Is it too risky? So it's not too risky.
It's not too risky. Out of bounds. No, it's smart.
I agree. It's not too risky. Number one, he's done it before. He did this before.
Yes.
It's a loophole, so... Listen, if you do this and you're too cavalier with it, then you're going to pay the consequences. But if you're weighing the merits of a stop that could take a long time and weighing that against the probability of a score, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, the scoreboard matters, but in terms of the deficit, but you need time to make up whatever deficit. So if you can save, you know, 35 seconds for whatever in every situation – you know, or in certain situations, you do it. It is incredibly astute. You've got to have great confidence in your team to then follow up on that act. He's done it before. It worked. I love it, but I'm with you. I think the NFL needs to tighten this up.
Are you in or are you out?
Let's get to Washington, the football team. Many years of public battles. Dan Snyder and Washington removed their previously offensive team name, and they changed temporarily to... Which, by the way, I kind of like. Washington football team.
Yeah,
I got no problem with this.
I don't mind it at all.
It looks pretty cool. The helmets look good. The color scheme's pretty sweet. So while most believe they'd have a new name by now, new team president Jason Wright, who we had on the show about a month or so ago, great guy, great hire, admitted to ABC in D.C. this week that there's no rush for a new name.
I think next year is fast because of how the brand has to come together. Through uniforms, through approval processes, through the league and all that. So next year is fast. So there's a pretty good chance we will still be the Washington football team next season. We could get there quicker, but it's actually pretty hard to get there that quickly because of all the steps that need to happen.
Okay, so let's react to what Wright said there. Washington would be making a mistake not having a new name and logo by the start of the 2021 season.
Out of bounds, and we're going to have Jason Wright on next week, next Thursday, to chat about this
Love
and
it.
Other things with the Washington football team. But I agree with you, BT. It is kind of cool. I don't think they're making a mistake. They should take their time with this. And the reality is all of the potential names that they have speculated about have all been taken and trademarked already. And so they're going to be in for a legal fight if there's one specific that they want to get that's already commandeered. So I'm going to say out of bounds. I don't think it's a mistake.
I totally agree. I love how forthright he was. You know, that's for a team that's had real issues with messaging. That was honest and sincere messaging to the fans. Hey, you know, here's the timeline, and you don't just snap a finger, come up with a logo, and boom, here we go, new threads, we're ready. Now, what would be wrong would be to try to, you know, pacify or placate certain people, to rush it, not get it right. You have to get this one right. And it doesn't matter. You've got time on your side, and let's face it, you know, they're not very good this year. They probably won't be, you know, ready to win anything big next year. Maybe you kind of time this where you're beginning to pop a little bit and ascend, and maybe it's serendipitous in that regard. But even if they're only average in a couple of years, whatever, get it right and continue to be honest. Look us in the eye and say, hey, here's what we're doing. I think it's a great approach, and I think it's the smart one. I'm with you.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, I'll read it because it's in front of me. The Jets are on a historic pace for futility and seem destined to land the number one overall pick in the draft. Now, everybody's got Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence going first overall. Consider him generational type talent. You're hearing references to, you know, the best since Andrew Luck. We'll see, but that's what's, you know, been put out there. Even though the Jets still have 2018 third overall pick Sam Darnold, who I believe in, who did practice again today, and they do believe he'll probably be able to play this weekend, whatever. Yesterday, former Falcons wideout Roddy White told The Big Lead what his advice would be for Lawrence if the Jets have the top pick.
If I'm Trevor Lawrence, if the Jets finish with no wins, I just go back to Clemson.
Really?
Yeah, I just go back. I don't want any part of that organization because it would be awful for you to get drafted by the Jets because they do not know how to put anything together over there as far as quarterbacking, weapons around the quarterback, as far as anything that has to do with offensive thing, talent. That team is just bad at picking players.
Gosh, not wrong. I mean, even their best wide receivers over the years, you know, Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, Santonio Holmes, they weren't even drafted by the Jets. Oh, my, he's not wrong. So Trevor Lawrence should stay for another year at Clemson if the Jets have the top pick.
Yeah, I'm going to say out of bounds. He's gonna get into the National Football League. If he might decide to pull a power play, that's for sure. But I don't think he's going to stay and forego an opportunity to get onto the NFL stage. This is a really interesting scenario that's going to develop because he's right. It matters, and we talk about this often, it matters who you get drafted to. And if the Jets are going to move on from Sam Darnold and take Trevor Lawrence, it better be a completely different feel. That means Adam Gase has got to be gone.
Well, that's a given.
Means they got to turn over this roster like right now. If they really want Trevor Lawrence, they better start moving assets before the trade deadline. There's a lot that's got to happen, but I'm going to say out of bounds. I don't think he should stay.
I'm going to say out of bounds as well. I don't think he should stay, nor do I think will he stay. First of all, you know, the Jets have to know, or at least Joe Douglas has to know, because those two clowns who own the team, I'm not sure if they know anything about football, but I would think that Joe Douglas would know that he's got to bring in a coach that is really appealing to Trevor. Now, that doesn't mean you offer Dabble Sweeney the job. I'm not saying that. I would not do that. But you have to look at it this way as well. Now, the Jaguars, right, other teams that need quarterbacks that will, you know, in theory, be in that top slot, right? Well, let's say Trevor Lawrence goes back to school and the Jaguars take Justin Fields this year. They address their quarterback need and Washington does something, or the two or three other teams that really need to address it, they address it. First of all, there's no guarantee that the Jets wouldn't have won over the first overall pick the next year. Would he go get his master's at that point? I mean, eventually you're gonna have to jump into the NFL. I do think the power play is a possibility, but I just feel like this is very different from not that the Jets are different, they're worse, because at least Parcells was here when Peyton Manning decided not to come. But I do think that the money and the desire to start the clock to get that second contract early is a bonus and a caveat and an impetus to get into the league as soon as possible if you can. I believe he leaves, and I believe that he would go to the Jets.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Georgia, the Dogs. How about them Dogs? Lost by 17 to Bama this weekend. Former walk-on quarterback Stetson Bennett completed a pretty rough 45% of his passes, a couple of picks as well, two touchdowns. However, yesterday head coach Kirby Smart said he'll stick with Bennett over five-star recruit JT Daniels and four-star redshirt freshman Dwan Mathis, who started the first game.
This week, we'll get to get a lot of guys reps. JT will get reps. Dwan will get reps. Stetson will continue to get reps. It doesn't change. It just gives us a chance to give more guys work and see where they are in their progress.
Kirby, what type of things do you want Stetson to focus on? And is he still your starter?
Yeah, like I've talked about before, I feel great about Stetson. I think he's done a good job managing the situations we put him in.
Okay. So Georgia should start either Daniels or Mathis after their bye this week. In or out?
I'm going to say out of bounds, BT. You know, I saw this kid play. He was really good in the first half. They were actually beating Alabama 24-20. But in the second half, they had a couple of three and outs, and he started to press, try to do too much. And ultimately, a couple of really bad mistakes. One, throwing late across the middle and high, That's interception. On a rollout to his right, going across his body. That was also an interception, which led to a second-half blowout for Alabama. JT Daniels is not going to start for this team. He's his transfer from USC. He just got cleared from his ACL, and now he may be healthy, but he's going to get obliterated in that pocket because he's not an athlete. They have some issues on their offensive line. And Dewan Mathis, who they like, is young. He's just not ready. He's the reason that Stetson Bennett is starting in the first place, because he was so bad against Missouri in their opener, and Stetson had to come in and basically save the day. Then he goes out and destroys Auburn and then beats Tennessee as well. So I think that Stetson's their guy for now. He's nothing special, but if they steady themselves offensively, and this is on Todd Monken as much as it is on Stetson Bennett, their offensive coordinator, they got to not make him or ask him to do too much, because that's when he gets in trouble.
I got to go inbounds. I got to disagree. I mean, I didn't like what I saw. I know it's Alabama. I understand that. But you, Georgia, come on, man. You got a top-flight defense. You were a top-five team before the game against Bama. I understand what you say about Daniels, you know, not ready in the pocket. Okay, fine. All right, the other kid didn't play that well, Mathis, against a team that really is not good at all. Understood. You're Georgia. I mean, you've got to have a higher aspiration than what you saw against Alabama. And if there's even anything that remotely mirrors what we saw that game one more time for this kid, I know it's a good story, then he's got to sit and you got to pull the plug. This can't happen again.
Are you in or are you out?
That's a bit of topsy-turvy baseball season. A lot of new rules, like the extra inning runner on second base, and of course the expanded playoffs. Now, yesterday, the commish, Rob Manfred, discussed the idea of the expanded postseason moving forward.
The expanded playoffs, not 16 teams, but something beyond the 10 that we've been doing, I think generated a ton of excitement that week where there was just baseball everywhere. It was fantastic for the sport.
Okay, so in or out, a 12-team playoff is the ideal number for Major League Baseball.
I'll say inbounds. Makes sense. Have a couple more. You do some things differently. You give more teams an opportunity. Not sub-500 teams, Astros, but you give some other teams some opportunities. I think this could be fun, and especially if you do wild cards differently. Instead of the one game, you know, one-off, make it a three-game series like they had this year, that's what I enjoyed most.
I love it. I'm totally on board with it, and I have not always been married to, you know, this kind of change, which to me is pretty dramatic in baseball. You know, you play 162 games to prove you medal. Do you, if you really need, you know, that extra spot to solidify who you are or where you were, I wasn't a big fan of it. But listen, I mean, watching these games staggered one after the, you know, 12:07 first pitch, 2:07, 4:07, literally all day, like March Madness. It is such a good look for the sport, eyeballs and energy. I love it. Totally on board. They will not change this, nor should they change this. Manfred got something right here, no doubt. All right, looks like the AFC is better than the NFC. Raise your hand if you had that before the season. I didn't.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.